It's tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's past. I'm Mark Livonier. During radio's golden era, one of the most listened to and award-winning dramatic shows on the air was the long-running anthology series Suspense, which not only brought listeners to the edge of their seat, but invited many actors who weren't necessarily well-known in dramatic roles to show their skills in a kind of play that would put their reputation aside or sometimes play off of it and deliver a really entertaining half hour of radio. Later on, we'll hear a broadcast from the series called Death Has a Shadow, starring Bob Hope. To say that Bob Hope's voice traveled the airwaves during radio's yesteryear is really only the half of it, as his storied career showed that he was one of the most moving comedians in history, from his tireless days and miles clocked on the vaudeville circuit of the 1920s with near-nightly performances, to his boxing the country nearly monthly with his act in the 30s, to his career in radio that at the height of his fame in the 1940s, one out of every four people in the country was listening to his broadcasts Tuesday nights at 10. And during the Second World War, he logged over 30,000 miles while performing shows for the troops and personnel overseas. And just as fast as he traveled the world, his rapid delivery of jokes was not something bought, but something earned in his early days on stage, and as a prolific joke writer, often making money selling them to bigger stars. And he used, at the time, his best for his national radio debut in 1933 on Rudy Valley's variety show.
January, what's the idea of the fur coat?
Oh, I expected a cold reception. No kidding, I really did.
Well, you were disappointed.
Oh, but I have a little cold, Jimmy. I have a cold.
Oh, you have a cold,
yes.
Eh? What are you taking for it?
Well, make me an offer.
After annual radio appearances, in 1938, Hope had his biggest radio break, simultaneously co-starring in a radio-themed movie, The Big Broadcast of 1938, where his theme song, Thanks for the Memory, was established, and also starting his own radio show, which he showed a tireless commitment to through the mid-1950s, hiring a large staff of writers that he would help to churn out hundreds of jokes a week for his program, testing them on no less than three different audiences before the best were whittled down to make the weekly broadcast. That, along with a constant stream of famous Hollywood guest stars, audiences couldn't help but tune in for the things he became adored for, like his topical jokes, his never being shy about going off script, roasting himself or his guests for fluffing a line, and his famous tongue-in-cheek rivalry with singer and comedian in his own right, Bing Crosby. Let's hear a broadcast of his program now with Crosby as guest from March 21st, 1950 on NBC.
The Bob Hope Show! It's the Bob Hope Show with Doris Day, Jack Kirkwood, Irene Ryan, yours truly, Hi Everback, Les Brown and his band of renown, our special guest, Bing Crosby. And here he is, the mascot of the Cleveland Indians, the great white nose, Bob Hope!
Thank you very much. Thank you, Indians. How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Bob back in Hollywood on the first day of Spring Hope, telling you all that at long last, spring is here, the romantic season we all hold dear, when a young man's fancy turns to what Alvin Barkley's been thinking about all year. Yes, sir, it's great to be back in Los Angeles. Mayor Barn was at the airport to greet me. He gave me the airwick to the city. And Paramount had a bunch of big shots waiting for my plane, but they all missed. When I arrived back, I heard three bands playing and saw 15 giant searchlights. I said, in my honor, a guy said, no, they just opened a salami counter in the Rexall drugstore. I've been playing in vaudeville the last 3 weeks, and the audiences were wonderful. I won't say how they received me, but after the first show, I took out insurance with Prudential. After the second show, Prudential took out insurance with Metropolitan. But I don't mind traveling. I've done a lot of flying. I don't think there's a seat on United Airlines I haven't been under. When we took off from New York, the stewardess bellied me into my seat. I still don't know what it was that I said to her. But it was a great trip. That sort of sneaks up on you, doesn't it? And you hate yourself for staying there. We had a wonderful trip. Les Brown's boys really love to fly. You should have seen him arriving at the airport and climbing to 15,000 feet. And Les calling him back to wait for the plane. You know when you... Thank you. We're going to work this way for a while. You know, when you travel with a band, you find out what a great union the musicians have. Instead of an airline hostess, we had Petrillo in a tight skirt. Les Brown is looking for a new tuba player. The old one was used to traveling by bus and got out to stretch his legs over Syracuse. A And we almost lost Eddie, the sax player, over Ohio. A flying saucer went by, and he leaned out of the window and tried to drink out of it. It was so smoky inside the plane, an eagle flew along for 300 miles looking in a window. He thought it was television. He wanted an introduction to Frankie Lane's Wild Goose. It was a real great trip, and the band treated me like I was one of them. They even let me play a game with them on the plane, Blind Man's Bluff with the door open. You know, the Cleveland Indians are here in the audience tonight to see the show, and we certainly want to welcome them. It's nice to see you, boys. You know, the boys are in town for spring training. That means no drinking, no smoking, and no girls. Look at their condition. Digger Odell's been following them with a basket for 3 days. The Indians are a wealthy team, you know. They don't lay off during the winter. They run around the country yelling, Pontiac, fine car. But the boys look good to me. These boys have taken off so much weight in spring training. Yesterday, Boudreaux slid into third, and his uniform was just rounding second. But I love baseball. Where else could you find 18 men running around on a diamond except in Ali Khan's house? I think they'll have a big season. And this year I had a plan where Cleveland couldn't lose a single ball game. But Happy Chandler said I couldn't take a gun into the bleachers. Thank you very much.
On a crystal set.
Keystone movies, Coogan and Chaplin, made you laugh and then cry.
Test my memory, my dearie. Do you recall when Gilda Gray did the shimmy shake?
And that was the start of the Frisco quake.
Dearie, life was cheery in the good old days gone by.
Do you remember?
If you remember.
Well, dearie, you're much older
than I. Oh, well, Pa, this is our 50th wedding anniversary. How are you feeling?
Oh, I don't know, Ma. I can't kick.
Well, why not?
At my age, my leg's liable to fall off.
Well, you ain't as pert as you were back around 1910.
You're right, Ma. Back in them days, I was a high flyer.
Eh?
I said I was a high flyer.
Yeah. But about 5 years ago, one of your motors conked out.
Well, don't forget, I've been bucking a headwind.
Oh, golly Moses, Pa. I never thought I'd wind up marrying you.
Yeah, it sure was a long time ago.
Dearie, do you remember when most gents owned a pair of spats, wing collars and derby hats?
Well, I'm all set for meeting a cutie. One of them ought to come by this corner any minute. I think I'll take off my chicken inspector badge and put on that new one.
Says, squeeze me, kid, I'm a lemon.
No, maybe I better wear the other one. It's jazzier. It says, they call me Kid Pepper, you can't shake me. Better fit and you can stuff. There comes a little cutie now. Hi there, chicken. Where'd you get those goo-goo eyes?
Well, aren't you the fresh one? But where have you been all my life?
Where have I been? I'm like the fat lady who took off her girdle. I've been all over the place.
Yeah.
You're too much of a dandy for me. Skip the gutter, kid.
Wait a minute. Come back, dagnabbit. I sure wish I knew what was wrong with me and the girls. What I need is somebody to talk to who could give me some advice.
Excuse me, boy. My name is Beatrice Fairfax.
What do you want?
I noticed that chickens give you the go-by, and I'm going to help you. I'm selling a perfume here that really gets the dames.
Is it powerful?
Powerful. You've heard of one called Conflict, and then there's one named Surrender, another one called I Give In.
Yes.
This one's called Hello, Operator, Get the Police.
Will it attract women to me?
Like a bear is attracted to honey. I use it myself.
Well, did you get lots of girls?
No, but I met a beautiful grizzly. Guess what Put that in your pocket, boy. That'll be $1. You got any more money?
Yep.
Then here's something else you'll need. It's a book called What Every Young Man Should Know.
What Every Young Man Should Know.
Yep, that'll be $1.50. And here's another book you ought to have. It's called What Every Young Girl Should Know.
Well, why do I need that?
If you're going to ask the question, you ought to know the answers.
Hiya, Dory. Here I am again.
Say, you're dressed pretty snappy. What's that hanging down from your straw hat?
A string, so I won't lose it. And I got another string running down my sleeves to my mittens, and another string running down my pant legs to my shoes.
Gee, it must make you feel like a jumping jack.
Yeah, yesterday I tipped my hat to a lady and shinnied up a telephone pole.
Well, Robert, you might as well come in.
Are we going to get cuddly tonight, or is your mother home?
She's here, but I don't think she'll bother.
Darling? Who's that just came in the front door?
It's Robert.
Did he bring his bicycle in the front room like he did last time?
No, he didn't bring his bicycle in the front room.
Hurry up, Dory. Give me a kiss before she comes in.
He did, too. I can hear one of the tires leaking.
Oh, Mother.
Well, I want to talk to Robert. Now, see here, young man. You've been sparking with my daughter for 2 years.
Well, what about it?
Well, your prospects aren't any too good. Doris could be going with a banker, and she knows an architect who just built a big, expensive building. What kind of a job is it that you've got? In a bakery draining jelly out of yesterday's donut.
I also fan the hot bread. And I give loyalty tests to the Russian rye. Yes. Well, look. I don't have much time to spend with Dory, and I just...
Well, don't you fret about me, Robert. I've decided that you're a boy who can be trusted. So tonight I'm going to let you sit on the couch with the lights turned down real low.
Gee, that's swell. Do you mean it, honest?
Yes, and if you behave yourself, tomorrow night I'll let Doris stay in the room with you.
When we waltzed to the Susie Band, my, wasn't the music grand.
Chowder party down by the seashore. Every 4th of July.
Robert, this is the last time I'm coming to Coney Island with you. You've just been sitting here on the beach ogling all the girls in bathing suits.
I have not.
You have, too. All afternoon, your eyeballs have been going in and out with the tide.
Well, boy, these 1914 bathing suits are pretty saucy.
Well, men's suits are, too. Look how daring yours is. The sleeves only come down to your elbows. And I can see right through those buttonholes in your leather leggings.
Well, it's pretty handy in the water. The back end opens up into a lobster trap. Well, you got to admit you're going to marry a he-man. How do you like the hair in my chest?
Oh, gee, it's swell.
I would have had more than one, but I ran out of Vigoro.
Oh, gee, it's wonderful being married, Robert. And I'm so happy for our anniversary you gave me this Model T Ford.
Yeah. Wait till I slip into my raccoon coat. My beaver tail with a hat, and we'll take a joyride over to the dance. First, it'll have to be cranked. Didn't work that time. Have to try it again. Well, I guess it needs more cranking.
Now, Robert, don't you get all tired out for the dance.
Now, don't worry about me. Just keep cranking. Some bus, huh? Never did get the sliver started that night, did we? Come here, you little rascal. Give me a kiss.
Oh, now, don't you be kittenish, Pa. It's getting so it isn't any fun to kiss you anymore.
It ain't?
No. The last time the clothespin fell off and your pucker collapsed.
You ain't sorry you married me, Ma, are you?
No, Robert. I've been happy every minute of the time. It's just been one long honeymoon. I was just thinking the other day. Here you are, 78 years old, but you've got the wit and the pep of an 18-year-old boy.
Yes.
You've got the pep of an 18-year-old boy?
Yes, why?
I'm a scout for the Cleveland Indians.
Do you remember? Do you remember? Well, dearie, you're much older than I.
Ladies and gentlemen, our guest tonight needs no introduction. When you hear his theme song, you'll all know who he is. Theme song, please. Here he is, Bing Crosby.
The night is like a lovely tune. Beware my foolish heart, how white the ever constant moon. Take care, my foolish heart.
Wonderful. That was My Foolish Heart, sung by the sound effects man on the Gary Crosby Show.
What's this? I haven't seen you lately, Robert. How come you haven't been out to the house?
Hmm? Oh, I've been on tour, but tell me, how are things over at Boys Town?
Fine. Say, now that you mention it, I do recall reading about you at the New York Paramount. They tell me that you cut, mowed, and stacked all the happy green stuff on Broadway.
Oh, don't knock my racket, kid. I have to work for a living. My family doesn't support me.
I must tell you, Hydrogen Head, I read about you breaking I'll tell him when he comes. All those records you broke at the New York Paramount, you were a smash. You must come back loaded with loot.
How much have we got? I'm empty. After taxes, I didn't even have enough left to pay my bill at the Waldorf Astoria.
You did? Well, what did you do?
I'm going to have to work it off.
You mean?
Yes, you're looking at the head flower girl for Elizabeth Taylor's wedding.
I want to be the page boy. Carry the train.
You must have had a pretty rough time on March 15th yourself, Gramps. Tell me, how'd you feel when you saw your income tax bill?
I felt like President Truman when that boat started rocking. Tell me something, Noel Flaxseed. Where did you...
Flaxseed, I'll be back. I want to look that up.
Go away. Come back here. Tell me, where did you assemble all the energy? The energy enough to do those six shows a day for 2 weeks, and then you fly around the country doing one-night stands after that.
Well, after all, some of us are not quite as old as some others I could mention. Who are much older than some of us, aren't you? You're falling apart, Dad. You're going to pot. Just look at that stomach. What do you do, buy and buy the carton?
Well, since you've turned the conversation physique-wise, there's something about yours that puzzles me.
What is it?
Are those your hips, or are you carrying a lovely bunch of coconuts?
You're getting ready for the Palladium. Should we stop these Chiron capers? Okay. You know, you're pretty frisky tonight, Dad.
Oh, I'm gay tonight.
What happened? Did you stop off at Thrifty's for a double Lydia Pinkham?
I'll move on to a customer.
Too strong. Anything exciting happened while I was away?
Exciting? Well, my new picture just came out.
I know, I saw it, and there's one thing I'm curious about.
What's that?
Wasn't that an unusual name they gave you, Francis?
Well, see here. See here, Sagmop. Francis is that picture about the talking mule.
Oh, I'm sorry. The ears fooled me. I apologize. I apologize to Francis.
Actually, friend, I haven't been around Paramount too much myself lately. After I finished Riding High, which incidentally has its world premiere April 1st at Front Royal, Virginia.
Take your time. We're not going there.
Well, right after I finished that picture, Doc Stevens hit me with that shiver here, you know.
He did, really?
Say, incidentally, it was very nice of you to pay me the visit in the hospital. I appreciate it.
We had laughs that day, didn't we?
I'll never forget it if I live to be 100.
Again. But really, I'm glad your operation went okay and they got through your money belt, Dad. I really am.
Seven layers,
first class. Still has the big bills. Go ahead.
Everything was fine. It was just fine. Of course, I did have a bit of trouble when they first wheeled me into the hospital.
What do you mean?
Well, the nurses saw the name Crosby, and automatically they rushed me to the maternity ward.
Well, I'll never forget that afternoon I came to visit you. Pardon me, nurse. My name is Bob Hope.
Oh, yes. Plastic surgery is right down the hall.
What do you mean, too late? Stop pushing me, nurse. Stop pushing. I'm here on a visit. I'd like to see Bing Crosby.
Crosby? What does he look like?
Well, he's got a light complexion, blue eyes.
What color is his hair?
Skin. I'm sure you know him. He's the crooner.
You'll find him in room 17. It's down the hall.
Oh, thanks. Here's Bing's room. I'll go right in.
9,781, 9,782.
Bing, put away your wallet. Playtime is over. You've got a visitor. Boy, did I have a tough time finding you. You had an appendectomy, huh?
Yes, sir.
Well, what are you doing here in the tonsil ward?
Well, it's very simple. I had my appendix transcribed for release at a more convenient place.
That's my boy. Put his honeymoon on tape so it wouldn't interfere with the fishing season. Bing, I'd never believe you just had an operation. You look like a million.
Who showed you the bill?
Well, you look great, boy. Tell me, what did you do with your appendix?
Well, you know, Everett had his appendix taken out at the same time.
What does that mean?
Well, now you know what you're going to get next Christmas.
You mean...
Yeah, bookend.
With a fringe on?
Yeah. But you brought me a gift, Robert. You shouldn't have brought me this.
What did you do? I had to, after all. You're not
and
sick
such
very
a
often.
Big package, too.
Wheel it in.
Oh, I can't wait to open this. Yeah. I'm going to unwrap it right now.
You sound like Burl.
Yeah. You sound like Burl's mother. Wheel it in. Where's it? Bring in my package for him. You're going to unwrap it right now.
Yes.
It right in
all
front
right.
of
oh,
you.
Yes.
All right.
Oh, well, just what I needed, a new golf tee.
Well, don't look so disappointed. It's not just an ordinary tee. It's the one they stand Mickey Rooney on during his love scene. Say, well, you don't look too comfortable, Flap. Can I do anything for you?
Oh, yeah. I wonder if you could help me sit up and crank up the bed, huh?
Oh, sure, then. There you are. Now I'll crank up the bed. Tell me, Bing, how was the operation?
Well, everything went fine until I needed a transfusion. Had a little trouble then because they could only find one guy in town with my type of blood.
Well, who was it?
Frank Sinatra.
Well, how did it work out?
Oh, it was murder. It was awful. When they hooked us up together, Frankie's veins sucked 2 quarts out of mine. I was a patient. He laid down, I got up and went home.
Must be solid acidophilus. Say, Bing, how about it? I've been here 5 minutes and you haven't shown me your operation yet. Come on, kid, unveil.
Now look out. Look
oh,
out.
Oh, come
now
on.
Look
I
out.
Want to see it.
You're wrinkling my nightie.
Oh, come on.
Look out.
Hold still. Let me see there.
Wow. What's the matter?
Argyle stitches.
I didn't want to look like a tramp in my bare midriff bathing suit. But I want to thank you again for coming to see me, Bob. I only wish you'd told me you were going to be here.
Why?
Well, simple, Charlie. If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake.
Baked a cake?
Baked a cake.
Baked a cake.
If I knew you were coming, I'd have baked a cake. How'd you do? How'd you do? How'd you do? Had you dropped me a letter, I'd have hired a band. Grandest band that I could find in the land.
Had I dropped you a letter, you'd have hired a band.
Les Brown's band.
Okay.
Just read the welcome mat for you. I don't know where you came from, because I don't know where you've been.
That's real nice.
Well, look, young man with a horn, I want to tell you it was nice of you to come to see me. And I want to thank you for that gift that you sent me before my operation.
Oh, it was nothing.
Well, what am I supposed to do with a pink satin bed jacket?
Well, my sister wore it, and she had a baby girl. I thought maybe to bring you the same luck.
if I knew you were coming, I'd bake the cake. Hired a band, goodness sake, if I knew you were coming, I'd bake the cake. How'd you do, how'd you do, how'd you do?
Memory of this month that's set aside. Thanks to Bing Crosby, the Pittsburgh Pirate Musical Rookie of the Year. The year 1492. As usual, Large, you batted 1,000% tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, we had a thrilling week flying United Airlines style on the way back home from the New York Paramount. We did shows in Syracuse, Cincinnati, Owensboro, St. Louis, Kansas City, and Denver. With that wonderful DC-6. And brother, what warm-hearted people and what cold-hearted weather. Believe me, I've never seen so much snow. We flew to Kansas City, but it was snowing so hard that our pilot couldn't find it with a Geiger counter. Mr. Ed Kesey and Claire Jarvis and Sam Moore up there, so we landed in the Olathe, Kansas, the Navy field. And the Navy took care of us. Thanks to you folks in Olathe. Last night we did a show in beautiful Denver, and I really mean beautiful. And all that snow looked like an old-fashioned Christmas card. Tomorrow we'll be in Palm Springs, California for Circus Week. And the weather forecast is clear and sunny. The temperature in the 90s. What a gruesome thought. Thanks again for the privilege of meeting so many of you in person. Good luck to the Cleveland Indians. And good night, ladies and gentlemen.
The Bob Hope Show from March 21st, 1950 on NBC. You're listening to The Door to Suspense Hour on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm Mark Levonier. Bob Hope had what could be referred to as a backyard personality, with a real gift of keeping the laughs going in a way that could be so fast you barely had time to laugh, but he was capable of striking a serious tone, which on radio mostly happened when he was sharing some of his experiences during the war years, where he visited many GIs in hospitals or ones that were on break from battle, performing 3 to 4 shows a day. He also accidentally became a pioneer in radio in his own right as he began broadcasting his weekly show during the war remotely from armed forces installations across the country, really rounding out one of his major contributions to the country, working hard to bring the laughs when people needed it most. From a young age, Hope's comedy was consistent on stage and screen, but it was while he was a giant on radio that he had a chance to show what he could do in a drama, outside of a few scenes here or there, and that was with a performance on radio's Suspense. This particular broadcast has endured from the series, as listeners hearing Bob Hope in anything but comedy struck an unnerving tone at the time, and this episode joins a long list of his triumphs on the air. Here's Hope's truly one-of-a-kind performance in his career in the play Death Has a Shadow, from May 5th, 1949, on CBS.
And now, Autolite presents Bob Hope in a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Don't ever answer a telephone just because you've got nothing else to do, just because you're curious. I was sitting in my big red leather swivel chair, my feet on the largest mahogany desk money could buy. A bottle of the best scotch balanced between my special custom-built shoes. Everything the best. That's the way I like to operate. The gold lettering across my office window spelling out Harvey Warren, counselor at law. I liked it that way. It had dignity. Yeah, I had everything. I had a house that rambled for 14 rooms. I built that house for Lily. Lily. She was beautiful. From the top of her auburn hair to the tip of her pretty little toes. Yeah, I had it all. I had everything. Till the day my Lily was murdered. That's why I couldn't stand being home anymore. I could smell her cologne in every room, a touch of it on every chair. That's why I was at the office that night, with nobody but the bottle to keep me company. And that was the call I should have never answered. But at night, 8 stories up in an empty office building, that ringing sounded urgent. Like it was the most important thing in my lonely little world. Hello?
Warren.
Who's this? Oh.
You know who this is.
Yes, Bolster.
No name, stupid. What are you doing at your office this time of night?
What do you want?
Have you got it?
Well, sure I've got it. It's all ready for mailing. I'll drop it off when I leave.
Don't bother. I'm going to pick it up tonight.
But I told you I'd mail it.
I changed my mind. I'm coming over. I'll be there at 10 o'clock.
Oh, I can't make it tonight. I'm leaving. I'm just going out.
You'll make it, all right.
Yeah, but why all of a sudden...
Tonight, Warren. 10 o'clock. And, Warren, don't try anything.
What are you talking about? Why should I try anything? What could I try?
You could be cute enough to figure out something. You're that kind of a guy. So, don't try anything.
Something must have gone wrong. All I was supposed to do was mail him his money. What got into him? Why would he want to come to my office now, at night, when the building was empty? Couldn't be just the money. He was coming for something else. Something else. But what?
Police Department, Johnnessy.
Get me homicide.
Now, hold on. He wants homicide, extension 458.
Hello?
Homicide?
This is homicide.
Is Joe there? Lieutenant Joe Scarpone?
Who's calling?
Harvey Warren.
Oh, hello, Mr. Warren. Hope you've been feeling better.
Well, thanks, Mike. I don't have much time. Would you get me Joe?
Well, he ain't here, Mr. Warren.
Well, where is he?
I don't know.
I've got to get to him.
Something wrong?
You've got to locate him, Mike.
Well, I've got a whole police department, Mr. Warren. Just say the word. What's wrong?
Only Joe. He's the only one that can help me.
Well, he may be calling in.
Then tell him to call me at my office, will you? Don't make any mistake, Mike. I'm at my office. I couldn't get it out of my mind. What had made Bolster switch like that? What had gone wrong? Must have figured it out and was coming over for just one thing. To kill me.
Lyon Apartments.
Lieutenant Joe Scarpone, please. Where can I reach him? He must have left some kind of a message.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. He hasn't been in all evening.
Well, tell him to call Harvey Warren.
Yes, Mr. Warren.
At my office, understand?
Does he have your number, sir?
He's got my number. Don't make any mistakes. At my office. He's got to reach me before 10 o'clock. That's tonight, understand?
I'll tell him, Mr. Warren. Thank you.
Madge. I've got to try Madge. He's got to be at Madge's place. I should have thought of it before. Busy. That must be Joe. He's got to be there. That's Joe trying to get me. I've got to wait. I have to give him a chance to get through. Why doesn't it ring? Why doesn't he call? Can't wait. 6-9-4.
Hello?
Madge, baby?
Oh, hello, Warren. What's this sudden devotion?
Oh, Madge, let me talk to Joe, and don't tell me he's not there.
Well, of course he's not here, Warren. What's the matter with you?
Madge, I got to find him.
Well, I am expecting him.
When?
Soon.
Don't give me double talk, Madge. When?
We've got a date, 10 o'clock.
10 o'clock? That's too late, Madge.
What's the matter, Warren?
Where can I reach him? Where can I find Joe?
Well, did you try his hotel?
He's not there.
Well, call homicide.
He's nowhere, Madge.
What's wrong, Warren?
There's no time to explain. Help me find him, please.
I'll do what I can.
At my office. Don't forget, at my office. Before 10. Kept on calling. Everywhere. Every bar he'd ever had a drink. His favorite restaurants. Even the Turkish bath where he played handball and got his rub down. Joe was nowhere. I looked at my watch. It said 9:31. The clock on the wall showed 9:35. Now I wasn't even sure of the time. I couldn't afford to be wrong about the time.
At the tone, the time will be 9:35 and 10 seconds.
The clock on the wall was right. There wasn't much time. Even if I get a hold of Joe, it'd be too late. My mind was starting to play tricks, starting to tie my insides up in 100 little knots. Suppose Bolster got here early. Suppose he got here before 10 and no Joe. I got up in a panic. My shirt was soaked wet to my back. I could run, yeah. I could get away while it was still time. But then Bolster would really know something was wrong. Maybe he wasn't going to kill me. Maybe he was just coming for his money. I had to get rid of the hysteria. Had to get a hold of myself. No use playing guessing games. I opened the door. I was going to leave. I wasn't going to be a sitting duck for a guy like Bolster. At that time of night, just one elevator was in use. It was directly opposite my office door. The indicator over the door flashed numbers when the car was running. I went to press the button to signal for the night man. Before I could press it, the car started up. Somebody was coming up. I wanted to run. I didn't know where. I was on the top floor. My eyes went to the ceiling. Down the end of the hallway, there was a spiral ladder that led into a trap up through the ceiling. Must have been the opening of the roof. I started to run for it. I stopped. Silly. When all the time there was a stairway going down. I ran for the exit sign and ducked into the stairway. Down one flight and I smacked right into it. A steel gate spread like an accordion across the bottom landing. The gate they always fastened in place at 9 o'clock. Trapped. I was trapped. And then I just stood there. Everything quiet. What happened to the elevator? Then I heard the door open. Downstairs, right below. It didn't come up to the eighth. It was the night man letting off the cleaning woman. I walked back up the steps. The light on the indicator showed the fifth floor. Then the indicator started flashing again. It was going down. Now was my time to signal the night man while he was still in the car. Before I had a chance, the telephone began to ring. It was coming from my office. Keep ringing, Joe. I'm coming. Just don't stop ringing. Hello. Hello, Joe.
Oh, ain't this Gladstone 2707?
That's right. Are you calling
for... Well, give me Sammy.
Who?
I want to talk to Sammy.
Oh. Right number, girlie. Wrong party. I looked at the clock. It was no use. Too late. Even if he did call, I started to go. I saw the bottle on the table. I had to take another drink. I felt a little better. Now I have to get out. Hello?
Hello. It's me again.
Look, girlie, there's no Sammy at this number.
I know, but you sounded kind of lonely. I'm lonely, too.
Forget it, will you? Don't tie up my phone, understand?
Sure, I know. You waiting for a call, too?
Get off my number. I don't want this phone tied up.
Sure, I understand, but just in case, why don't you take my...
I started to go and wasn't going to stop, not for anything. Then I realized it might be too late. Suppose he was on his way up. Suppose he was watching the entrance. Why did that girl call back? What did she want? Then I knew it was a trick. A typical hoodlum trick. Bolster was using that girl to check up on me. Playing at cat and mouse. His way of holding me to the phone. Making sure while he was on his way up. A trick. 9:40. The clock kept staring at me. The minute hand beating its way around the circle. 9:40. That girl again checking up on me. Who did Bolster think he was kidding? He knew I had to answer that phone. Hello.
Warren?
Joe, you don't know how I've been trying to get you all night.
Yeah, I know. Your line's been busy.
Oh, come right over, Joe.
What's the matter?
There's no time to talk. Just get here.
Oh, well, I got a date, Warren. It's my only night off. You know how Madge is.
Joe, this is a matter of life and death.
Whose life?
My life.
Oh, well, I'll be right there.
Before 10, Joe. It's got to be before 10. My eyes were drawn to the clock again. I watched the minute hand cutting down the time. If Joe came with a squad car, he'd be here in a matter of minutes. But it was his night off. Maybe he wouldn't be able to get a cab. I took another drink just for luck. I opened the door and listened for the elevator. It didn't take long. I went into the hallway. The light on the indicator was flashing. 2, 3, 4. Maybe it wasn't Joe. Maybe it was Bolster. How was I to know? I ducked into the stairway landing, watching. Joe!
What? Warren, are you nuts?
Oh, I've never been so glad to see you, to see anybody.
You know better than that, coming up from behind a guy. Say, you look terrible. What's wrong? Well?
Don't close the door, Joe.
Why?
When he comes, we can hear the elevator.
Okay. Now, what's it all about?
He's due here at 10 o'clock. He's a killer.
Who is a killer?
I have to start from the beginning.
You don't have much time.
But you won't understand unless I explain.
Okay, but don't start dramatizing. It's 9:45.
Well, we have to start with the day Lily was murdered. Remember I called you? And when you came, you found me sitting in the bedroom looking at her? Her head hanging almost to the floor. The rest of her doubled up in the bed. Her auburn hair gently suspended like someone spun fine silk around where the bullet went through that lovely head. She was so beautiful. I was sitting there looking at her. And the sounds tumbling around my head. The photographers, the newspapermen, flashbulbs, all like a bad dream.
Look, can't you take the hair away from her face?
I'll cut your head off if you touch that body.
Let's see the gun.
Show him the gun, Mike.
It's a gun. What's there to say?
Well, we understand it's Warren's gun.
You understand nothing until it's official.
The coroner said it happened this morning, about 4 hours ago. Now, how about that, Lieutenant Scarponi?
Then quote him. Don't ask me. Mike.
Yeah?
They had enough. Get him out of here.
Oh, wait a minute. Not so fast. I want one more shot of Warren. Put that drink back in your hand, Mr. Warren, please.
Now, look, fella. Don't overdo it.
This is no private affair, Lieutenant Scarponi.
Why don't you lay off?
Well, put the drink back in his hand.
Take it the way he is and get out.
We'd like to do it the way it happened. He had a drink in his hand.
It wouldn't look so good, Lieutenant, if the paper said you were covering up for a lifelong friend.
Mike, get him out of here.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Well, this is some mess, Warren.
Yeah.
How did it happen?
Well, I loved her, Joe. You knew how I loved her. More than anything in the world. Now look at her.
Yeah.
You know, we've been fighting. Last night was the worst that ever happened. So I ran out of the house.
What time?
Well, right after dinner. I went down to the Silver Grill and had a couple. You can check on that. Then the Biltmore and had a few more. Then I remember calling a cab on 7th and Hill. And then, so help me, Joe, that's all I remember.
What do you mean, that's all you remember?
Well, that's all. I drew a blank. We've known each other all our lives, Joe. Did you ever know me to black out?
Oh, that's not like you, Warren.
But that's what happened. I don't remember anything.
Until when?
Until I woke up and called you.
And where did you wake up?
Right here, in the bedroom.
In bed?
No, in this chair, just like I am now. I saw Lily, just like she is now. Blood on the floor. I know she's done for, my beautiful Lily. Then I get up to get a bottle. And I sit down again in this chair. I take one good long drink. I reach for the phone on the night table. I call you. I've been sitting here since with a bottle.
Mm-hmm. And the gun, is it yours, Warren?
You know that gun is mine.
It was on the floor. It's the gun that killed her.
Joe, do you think I did it?
Well, I don't have to tell you how it looks.
I know how it looks. What I want to know is, do you think I did it?
I'll have to book you, Warren.
Oh, I couldn't have killed her, Joe. You know I couldn't. I loved her too much. I couldn't have killed her, Joe.
Before we get to trial, Warren, for your own good, you'd better start remembering.
Seems like a long time ago, Joe. I just couldn't remember what I'd been doing there in the bedroom after Lily was murdered. Couldn't even remember how I got there.
But 2 minutes ago, you were scared to death. You were trying to reach me every place in town while I'm here.
You remember that day in the courtroom?
What's that got to do with the killer who's on his way up here?
Quite a bit, Joe. That's what I'm coming to. But before he comes, you've got to know the whole story.
I know the whole story.
Not quite. Think back to that day in court, Joe. You remember how bad it looked for me? All the newspapers were sure I was done for because I couldn't remember where I was when she was killed. And I knew I was somewhere else when it happened. But all the evidence piled against me. Everybody sure I was a dead duck. You and Madge in court at my side and the prosecuting attorney pressing the jury for the full penalty.
And the only defense offered by the accused is that he doesn't remember. He pleads not guilty, claiming temporary insanity. Forgetfulness as so conveniently happening to the accused cannot be construed as insanity. The state must therefore ask that the full penalty according to the law...
Madge. Oh,
Mr.
Get me some water.
Hey, pass out.
The poor man, he just couldn't take it that way.
This court will keep order. Order.
You all right now, Warren? You feel better?
Joe, I didn't do it.
Yeah, sure.
Joe, I remember now. I remember. I didn't do it. I was out of town when it happened. I was out of town. I was out of town when Lily was murdered, Joe. And we proved it, remember? And I was acquitted. Like a bad dream, wasn't it?
Look, for the last time, Warren, is this what you call me up to your office for? What's this got to do with somebody coming over here to kill you?
Yeah, like a bad dream.
Okay, Warren, I've got a date with Madge.
Oh, no, Joe, you got a date with the killer.
Then who is the killer?
I'll never forget that day they acquitted me. I walked out of court a free man.
I know you weren't guilty. Your alibi proved you weren't guilty. I know all that.
Yes, Joe, but you don't know. I was guilty.
What did you say?
I was guilty.
Oh, you're losing your mind, Warren. You're nuts.
If I'm nuts, what does that make you?
Makes sense, Warren.
Lily thought I was nuts, too. Smart little woman. Thinking she could make a sucker out of me. She was going to leave me. Take half of all I had. That's what she thought.
How did you kill Lily that morning when you were in Glendale? I know you were in Glendale because your alibi proved it.
It was Lily who gave me the idea how to do it. You know how beautiful she was? Every Thursday, the maid's day off, she stayed in bed, slept the clock around, taking care of her looks. I began figuring. Lily all day alone. Lily in bed. All I had to do was hire somebody to kill her while I was out of town.
Then the guy coming up here...
That's right, is the killer. A three-time loser and very tough. I gave him my gun to do it with, and that's all there was to it. He's the man you want, Joe. He's on his way up here to kill me. Instead of doing that, you'll arrest him and clear your books on the Lily case.
So, this is why it was so important for me to get here, huh?
Well, you have to admit it was neat. Getting myself pinched, faking the blackout, stacking the evidence against myself, and forcing you to bring me to trial. I never had a blackout in my life, but it got me off. Great law, that double jeopardy. Puts you on the spot, though, doesn't it, Joe? You know I'm guilty, but there's nothing you can do about it. The law says I can't be tried twice for the same crime. You see, Joe, I happen to be one of those lawyers who knows his law.
Yeah. You've always been at the head of the class. Never worked too hard to get there. Just by looking over the next guy's shoulder and using him was the smart way, huh? Yeah, Kitty, very neat.
I knew you'd be a good sport about it.
Maybe I'm just another dumb cop to you. Well, I don't like anybody making a sucker out of me. Especially a guy who's supposed to be my good friend.
Where are you going?
You got a date with this killer who's due here any minute. Well, I got a date with my girl. Good night, Warren. We're both going to keep our dates.
Well, Joe, what are you trying to do? You're a cop. You've got to pick him up. He's a killer, Joe.
I can pick him up after 10 o'clock, can't I?
Oh, you can't leave me, Joe. You can't leave me here alone.
I don't like your company.
Oh, he's going to kill me, Joe.
He's going to kill you. Now, why should he do that to a guy who pays so well for what he buys?
Well, I'm the only one who knows he fired that gun.
All through for the night?
Yeah, I'm all through. He's gonna stay.
I'm going down.
Well, step in.
Stay where you are, Warren.
You can't leave me.
Let go of my arm.
Joe!
Close the door, mister. I said close the door.
Joe, he's gonna kill me. Joe!
Hello, Warren.
What? Bolster. It was Bolster standing there and leering at me. Joe, he's here! Joe!
Shut up. Don't do that again.
Where did you come from?
Well, you don't think I'd ever use a front door, do you? They build these places with fire escapes, you know. Now, into your office.
I started walking. I had to do something. Him right behind. Then I made a break for it, into the office. Then I saw the butt of his gun smash through the window. And then Bolster's hand reached through and unlocked the door.
Pretty cute.
Bolster, you're not going to do anything. You want your money. Don't you want your money?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The money comes first.
Well, it's in one of these drawers.
You know, you told me to do it with your gun.
I don't remember which drawer.
I couldn't figure it out. Why a guy should want me to plant his gun.
That's strange. I was sure it was...
Warren, where's the money?
I'm trying to find it.
Don't stall.
It was a white envelope.
You know, it didn't figure until you went to trial and they acquitted you. That's when I began to worry.
So many white envelopes.
But I still wasn't sure until tonight, when I got here, when I see what you've been up to. Find that dough.
I'm trying. I misplaced it.
And then it hit me. You was free and I was liable. No more tricks.
It should be.
Find that dough.
Here. Here it is.
On a desk. Lay it down. Yeah. Now, turn around.
Oh, don't you want to see if it's all here?
Turn around.
And like a dumb 6-year-old kid, I turned around.
Oh!
It was the funniest sensation. hearing the shot, feeling the panic, but nothing happened. I turned around. Bolster's eyes started to roll. His mouth opened like he had something to say, and then he dropped.
No, it didn't happen to you, Warren.
Joe.
The elevator opposite your door and the broken window, you can thank them both.
You're a very funny guy, Joe. That's some game you played. Is he dead?
He's dead.
Hey, what are these for?
I'm holding you for murder.
Murder? How can you be so dumb? I was acquitted, remember? You can't try me again.
I'm talking about this murder.
Are you crazy? I didn't shoot Bolster. I didn't even have a gun.
I thought you were one lawyer who happened to know all about the law. Or didn't you know that it makes no difference who shot him? The two of you were committing a felony. And the law says all accessories to a felony are equally responsible for all acts resulting from the felony. Unquote.
But Joe...
Including homicide, Warren, including homicide. I don't know all about the law like you, Mr. Harvey Warren. I only know just enough to get by. Let's go.
Joe, wait a minute. Joe, I think I'm going to faint. I'm going to black out, Joe. Wait. You see, I don't remember a thing, Joe. So help me, Joe. I don't remember.
Thank you, Bob Hope, for a splendid performance.
Suspense from May 5th, 1949 on CBS, closing this Door to Suspense Hour on Tuned to Yesterday featuring Bob Hope. Be sure to be with us again as we enjoy more great shows from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levionier. Thanks for listening.